is WILL AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good afternoon. This is Don Nolan. I'm sitting in for Steve Shoemaker while he is still on vacation. Steve will return next Sunday after a long and extended vacation. Well earned indeed. Our topic today is the 125th anniversary of the University YWCA, and I don't think a whole lot of folks know what a treasure and what a history the YWCA has and is in this town. And our guests are the Associate Director of the University YWCA, Rachel Dikas-Miller. Rachel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Don.
We also have with us Gia Lewis-Smallwood, who is the program coordinator of the University YWCA. Gia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Don.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you all first before we find out about the 125th anniversary of the YWCA. That's quite a number for almost any organization on this campus, although there are a number that are close to that age. Rachel, tell us a little bit about how you got to Champaign-Urbana and the YWCA.
Well, I'll give you the shortened version. My first time working with the YWCA was actually in late 2003. I had just moved back down to Champaign-Urbana from living in Chicago for a few years, and I was in the position that Gia is in now, doing programming, focusing on areas of racial justice and social justice, and also women's issues and women's rights. And I worked for the YW for close to probably a year and a half as a paid staff person, then also as an advocacy consultant, and worked on some special events. I've also been a board member and came back about a year and a half ago as the associate director.
Now, you've done some international work, as I understand it, a human rights advocate for the national organization, right?
Yeah, it was actually an international internship with the World YWCA. It's a program that the World YW has had since, I believe, the early 90s. Its focus is to encourage women that are under the age of 30 to get more involved in policy and human rights and advocacy issues. And I was selected to do that in 2006 and was actually able to spend about 3 months over in Geneva, Switzerland with the World YW office and also at the United Nations.
Must have been quite an experience.
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing and it was wonderful. And I hate to admit that I probably think about it every day in some capacity because it was just so the World office is absolutely incredible. There are so many different women from all over the world that work in that office. And the type of work that they do is truly remarkable. The issues that they address, the number of countries that they work in on a daily basis is outstanding.
We'll talk a little bit more about that later as we get further into the program. Gia, you are a graduate of the University of Illinois, BA degree, I understand. Is that right?
That's right.
Right. And you are the program coordinator at the Y, but you have a very interesting biography in and of itself. You have a political science major, is that right?
Yes, I have a triple major in political science, economics, and Spanish.
And while you were figuring out how to solve all the political problems in the United States, you were also trying to win a seat on the Olympics, is that right?
Yes. When I was at the University of Illinois, I was a track and field athlete. I'm a discus thrower, and so I was an All-American and Big Ten champion there. And then I continued that on in a post-collegiate career after that. And so, yes, trying to win an Olympic medal.
Are you still training?
I am still training, yes.
What are your ambitions?
To make a world team next year and then to improve my world ranking this year.
Very good. And Rachel, you are in the MSW, Master of Social Work program. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. I just started last last June, and I'm getting ready to start my second year as a MSW student in the Advocacy, Leadership, and Social Change specialization.
Very good. Well, before we get into discussing the 125th anniversary of the Y, let me just remind all of our listeners, this is a call-in show. If you'd like to call in to talk to Rachel Dietkes-Miller, who is Associate Director of the University YWCA, or Gia Lewis-Smallwood, who is the Program Coordinator of the Y, you can call in this afternoon at 333-9455. You can also use an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Well, let's talk a little bit about the history of the YW at the University of Illinois. 125 years. How did it get started, and what are the high points?
Well, there are a lot of high points, I suppose. the YW officially started, at least the we have an actual date on our books, as March 19th, 1884, as starting on the campus of the University of Illinois. And really, one of the early initial reasons for the organization starting on this campus was to provide housing for women, because at the time there was no housing that was made available to the female students at the U of I.
Just males?
Yeah, just males.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, back then in the early days, the campus was relatively small,
mm-hmm.
And I don't even think it really included even all of what's known as the quad now. But there was no housing available for female students, and so the YW, that was one of their initial responses and needs that they tried to work to fulfill.
I understand you are the oldest continuously operating student affiliated YWCA. Is that right?
That is right. Quite a mouthful, but a very neat accomplishment. We are the oldest continually operating student YWCA in the country. Just so that you know, there have been several student YWCAs that have been started initially first. So a lot of the YWs that you see just today, if you had gone back about 100 years or so, there are several. They were student YWCAs to start with. Before the University of Illinois YWCA, Bloomington, Illinois, so ISU, had the first student-based YWCA. So they were started, I believe, 5 or 6 years before.
So they weren't continuous?
They weren't continuous. They ended, and then so we've kept going. So It's most YWCAs sort of started off as student-based YWCAs, and then we're one of the few remaining 125 years later.
And a lot of people don't realize that at one point not too long ago, the YWCA had its own building on campus. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the YW, much like our sister organization, the University YMCA, has had several different buildings on campus. Most of them have been along Wright Street. And what is now known as Coble Hall was the last building that the YWCA did own and occupy. And that was up until, I believe, the early 1960s. And since then, we've been in the YMCA building.
And didn't the University of Illinois claim it somehow, as I recollect?
Yeah, like a lot of property on campus, it's definitely a high commodity. And so the university, from my understanding in the history of it, the university had been making offers on an annual basis to the YW for the purchase of that building. And did so. I mean, the offer must have been a good one back in those days. And the YWCA decided to sell the building to the university in exchange for a sum of money, and then also for a plot of land on campus.
And now you reside where exactly?
We're on the first floor of the University YMCA, which is located right on Wright Street, just across from Lincoln Hall.
Mm-hmm. So what is the high point of the 125th anniversary going to be this year?
Do you want to talk about it, Gia?
Sure. The theme that we have going for 125th anniversary is really fascinating. Our theme is Connect, Empower, Transform. So basically for the past 125 years, we have been instrumental in connecting women to the rich history of the YWCA and also the rich history of the YWCA as it played a vibrant role on the University of Illinois campus. We have been a part of so much change that the university campus has undergone on for the past 125 years. So connecting women to that history. Then empowering women. We are responsible for empowering women now to really take a stand and be a voice of change in social justice issues and racial justice issues. And then lastly, because we work with University of Illinois students, we are basically transforming leaders of tomorrow. So our theme is perfect: connect, empower, transform. It really speaks to the mission of our organization and what we've done on campus.
The mission of the organization has some of that language. What is the mission?
The mission of the organization, it's actually incorporated into the logo for the YW, and it's eliminating racism, empowering women. And that was part of a national effort, which is known as the Change Initiative, that really started in probably the late 90s and continued on into 2001, when the YW nationally was having going through just an identity transformation. They really wanted to make sure that their name and their logo and the mission was reflective of the critical and important work that was being done across the country.
So you shared this mission with the national organization?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
How did the national come up with that?
You know, I don't know. Do you know, Gia?
I do know that the national organization has always been a very influential change in racial justice issues throughout the country.
Where is it located? What's the national office?
They're located in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they've been very instrumental in racial justice issues, especially in the 1930s, 40s, obviously 50s and 60s.
Yeah, for decades.
Yeah, and so they've been very opening of women of color, and women of color begin to have a real voice and really spoke up and said, this organization has always talked about, you know, the elimination of racism. We need to be more forceful with that. We need to put that in a mission, boldly say it. That's what we represent, to be more forceful with that. And I think that's sort of how the ball got rolling. And then in the 1970s, the One Imperative, which has since been removed as of, I think, this year.
Mm-hmm.
But it even became to the point where we were going to do the elimination of racism by any means necessary. So women of color really had a good voice and really said to the national organization, this needs to be an important part of the mission in a clear way that's boldly stated.
It's been the mission for how long? It's been that mission as long as I can recall. Do you know?
I don't know in terms of nationally. Unfortunately, I wish I did. I know that in terms of actually having those two shortened statements be part of the, you know, everything that is seen by the YWCA in terms of, you know, marketing and publicity, that's relatively new. That's been since 2003. But that mission and that commitment to, you know, to making sure that women feel empowered, whether you're a young woman, whether you're a child, whether you are, you know, an older woman that's going through, like, you know, any number of issues. And then the same with eliminating racism, you know, exactly what Gia said, that dialogue really started to heat up in the 60s and 70s and definitely became, if you look back at some of the older materials of when some of those meetings happened, it's really interesting to read about how they had been talking about this for years to make sure that this was, that they were, you know, one of the main organizations that was going to be committed to those issues.
Mm-hmm. Just to remind our listeners, you can call in to talk with our guest this afternoon on the subject of the 125th anniversary of the University YWCA. Our guests are Rachel Dietkus Miller, who is the Associate Director of the University YWCA, and the Program Coordinator, Gia Lewis Smallwood. I'm going to forget that Smallwood at some point in time. I'm sorry, Gia. So feel free to call in and talk with our guests if you have a question or comment. Well, if an individual wants to, if someone is interested in finding out just exactly how you're going to go about featuring the 125th anniversary, exactly what events are going to take place to celebrate?
Well, we have had some events already. Our official anniversary year is this year, 2009, and events will continue into 2010.
So this has been ongoing for half a year.
Mm-hmm. But earlier this year, we had an anniversary reception where we invited members of the community and the campus community and students and just fellow colleagues to just enjoy that actual moment. I mean, when you really pause and think that that an organization such as ours, and especially in this community, has lasted for 125 years, it's really good to just just pause and have a celebration of that. And that event was really a kickoff into the other events that we have been having. Like Gia said, you know, we are going to be having we have a theme for our anniversary event, and that big event will be on Friday, November 7th at the Hilton Garden Inn, and our keynote speaker will be Jean Driscoll.
Okay, and who is Jean?
You want to talk about Jean?
Jean Driscoll is absolutely amazing. I had the wonderful pleasure of meeting her about 6 years ago. She's just absolutely remarkable. She has won the Boston Marathon 8 times. She has, I think 2 Olympic silver medals. Just as absolutely remarkable. She will be our keynote speaker for that event. Jean actually was a student with the University of Illinois and did wheelchair racing and just was voted, I believe, one of the top 25 female athletes of the 20th century. She is truly remarkable. And the best part about Jean is that she's so down to earth and an absolutely great person. And so when we were thinking about speakers, I thought, man, she is perfect for the theme of connect, empower, transform. If there's somebody that can connect, empower, and transform people's lives and hearts with their story and what they bring to this world, it's definitely Jean Driscoll.
That's going to be the focus of her speech?
Yes.
Okay. What time again so that if anybody wants to write it down, they can...
Yeah.
November what?
It's Friday, November the 6th.
What time?
Yes, I said the 7th. It's the 6th.
Friday, November the 6th.
What time and
from
where?
From 6 to 9 p.m.
At
Hilton Garden Inn. Yes,
very good.
Hilton Garden Inn.
Sounds like an exciting evening. Who all is welcome? Anybody and everybody?
Yes, we'd love to have anybody and everybody. If you have any connection to the YWCA in the past, if you've ever been a past member, past board member, past president, please come out. If this seems like an organization that you've kind of heard a lot about, but maybe have never been to an event, we'd love to have you. And then if you're just kind of curious, wow, an organization has been around for 125 years, I need to hear more about this, we'd love to have you there. The event will showcase things that we've done in our past, so it'll be a little bit of a historical review. Then we'll have Jean's presentation, and then we'll do some other fun and creative things. But it will, give you a sense of who we are and what we've done. So if you're interested in that, we'd love to have you.
What are some of the programs that you all sponsor that university women or others might be interested in being involved in this year?
Well, there's one program that is considered a hallmark program, and hallmark programming within the YWCA family means that it's a program that really is something that is measurable, and it's something that is directly connected to the mission. So it has to fall within that area of empowering women and or eliminating racism. And so one of those programs that we have done for the past, I believe, 13, this might be our 14th year participating, is the Week Without Violence. It always takes place in the month of October. And because we're on a university campus, we're able to really, utilize the student body and include them in the types of things that we do. So do you want to talk about some of the specific things going on that week?
Yeah. Week Without Violence, wonderful program. I have such a great time working with students on this program. The first thing that we're going to do is Monday, I believe, October the 26th, we'll be having a Chalk the Quad event for students on campus. And RSO.
What?
Chalk the Quad.
Okay.
Yes. And it's for students on campus or RSO groups that are on campus. They can basically, we supply the chalk and also a... sign up participation form because there are rules in chalking, but they can chalk the quad about, and it can range from any aspect of violence worldwide. So we've got so many wonderful student groups that stand for different social justice causes throughout the world. That's a great opportunity for them to chalk you know, the quad and let people know about those causes. So again, that's Monday, October the 26th. Last year was the first year that we did chalk the quad, and it was really interesting because we got it all chalked and it was beautiful, and then the sprinkler system came on at night. And so on Monday, when students were walking on the quad, half the chalk was gone. So we decided to do it on a Monday from 3 to 5 this year, and that way people can come on out and chalk, yeah,
so,
and read
so
the
you
messages.
Schedule around the sprinkler
That's
schedule.
Right, yes. So that at least students yes. can participate, walk on the quad, see the messages before the sprinkler system kind of mm-hmm. does its thing. So we'll be doing that. We'll also be doing that following Tuesday, a clothesline project with Women's Resources Center. Mm-hmm. Pat Morey, wonderful woman, a longtime great supporter of the YWCA. We'll be working with her office and doing a clothesline project on the quad that deals with women that have suffered from sexual assault and domestic mm-hmm. violence. So great program that way. And then another big thing that's in the works that we've been working with Women's Resources Center on is hosting a Halloween party on actually Halloween. Mm. We haven't come up with a name for this type of party yet, but the idea is to host a Halloween party that is sort of anti-racist images, anti-sexist costumes, that kind of thing. It's alcohol-free, but we basically want to give students an opportunity to participate in a Halloween party and not feel like they have to dress in racially themed costumes that are inappropriate or sexist themed costumes that are inappropriate, but give them a chance to kind of have a good time and then, you know, honor people's race and, you know, sexuality. So we're looking into doing that, and I'm pretty sure it's a go on October 31st. There will be more details on our website, www.ywca.org/University of Illinois. If you're interested in coming to that, there'll be more details about the date and time or the location and time and all that.
You might throw in a phone number, too, while you're at it.
Yeah, 217-344-0721.
Well, Rachel, you were a human rights and advocacy fellow for the World YWCA and the United Nations. You have been right in the middle, obviously, of a number of issues mm-hmm. that you're working at locally here. At a global level, what kind of impact do you feel that the YWCA is having on the lives of women and peoples of color from an international perspective? And then we'll come back and talk about local.
Well,
what is the impact?
Well, the World YWCA has existed longer than the YWCA USA, and obviously longer than the University of Illinois chapter, too. At the international level, the World YW is involved in well over 100 countries. I believe it's 122 countries where there is some presence of a local association doing work that is related to specific issues that are occurring at the local level. The World office is divided into different regions, and so there's a person that focuses on each different region. Like ours, for example, would fall in the North America region, or the Americas region of the World office and their work. In terms of the impact and measuring that impact, it's, you know, I'm most familiar with a lot of the work that the World has done with the United Nations. The World YWCA was the first women's organization to have consultative status with the United Nations, which is something that not a lot of people know. In terms of non-governmental organizations that are very involved with the UN, the World Office has been instrumental in a lot of change that has happened at that level. The World Office has also often been credited internationally by other international organizations, by other ambassadors of countries, and even by the UN itself, for being one of the strongest leaders of having an impact on the HIV and AIDS crisis around the world.
What are the hot spots?
What do you mean the hot spots?
Where's the greatest need around the world in the 122 countries?
I really think it's all over. I mean, it depends on
evenly distributed.
It depends on what the issue is. You know, domestic violence is a very huge and troublesome issue all around the world, and the YW, and you know, I can think of you know specific countries where the YW may be the only organization, only women's organization, that is advocating on behalf of women and girls in a particular area. Definitely all around Africa. You know, Kenya, for example, has like a very strong YWCA chapter. You know, the Baltic states have a very strong presence of the YWCA because they've been one of the few organizations that have existed for a very long time. And so they've been able to leverage that length and that history in order to create some incremental but also successful change over the years.
You mentioned Kenya. Wasn't there a world conference in Nairobi?
There was. I believe that was in 2007. The World YW has every 4 years they have a world conference, and the last one was in 2007 in Nairobi, and the next one will be in Zurich in 2011.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to remind our listeners, we are keeping the faith, and our topic this afternoon is the 125th anniversary of the University YWCA, and our guests are Rachel Dietkes-Miller, the Associate Director, and Gia Lewis, who is the Program Director at the University YWCA. And if you'd like to call in to put a question or a comment to our guests, you can call in at 333-9455. You can also call an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. While we're taking a little break here, let me just mention that support for Keeping the Faith has been provided in part from listeners like you who contribute to WILL, from the Friends Meeting on East Main in Urbana, and from the University YMCA in Champaign. Also, another reminder that the YMCA's Dump and Run collections begins again August 12th through 21. And whether you're donating your time, your stuff, or both, the YMCA needs your help to make it a success. Collections will be at the Stock Pavilion, and if you'd like to get more information about the Dump and Run collections, you can call the YMCA at 344-0721. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the needs of women on the University of Illinois campus today. What would say the top 3 to 5 needs of specifically women at the University of Illinois campus? I know you don't just work with females who are matriculating at the university. You help others as well, but just specifically university women. What are the main challenges that women face today at the University of Illinois campus?
Gosh, that's a very good question.
Domestic violence used to be pretty, not domestic violence, but date rape and abuse.
Yeah,
and
those are still, sexual assault, that's still a very big issue on the University of Illinois campus.
I'd definitely say it's still in the top 3.
Yeah, no question. I would say another big issue that women are facing, and it's interesting when you're dealing with college-age students, is because they're at such a critical time in their life where they're trying to figure out who they are, what they believe, and they're still very shapeable into, you know, what's going on with their life. So I feel like another big issue is healthy dating, being in or engaging in healthy relationships.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously domestic violence, which is the more extreme end of an unhealthy relationship. But, you know, how to recognize if you're in an unhealthy relationship, even if it's not resulting in domestic violence. I think that's a big issue.
Interesting topic. Women. Let's come back to that. We do have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment?
Yes, this is Tajia. My name is Jane Talk, and she played basketball against my daughter in high school, and I just am so proud of her for what she's doing and how she's bringing up these issues and topics that are so important. And I'm not one bit surprised that she is important in our community, because she was a wonderful high school student too. And that's all I have to say.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comment. We have another caller on line two. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment?
Is this for line two?
Line two, yes, ma'am.
Well, this is Leisha Banks, and I'm the executive director at the YWCA, and I just wanted to call in and tell Rachel and Gia what a good job I think they're doing in representing the YWCA well. And I wanted to just ask them to both speak a little bit about the impact the YWCA has on young women who participate in our programs. And I ask this question because a lot of times I think people look at students and think, you know, what help do they need? They have everything they need. But I would like for them to speak to the special needs of women students and the work that the YWCA is doing with them. And, again, I'm very proud of them and proud of the YWCA's 125 years on this campus. Thanks a lot.
Well, the boss.
Thanks, Leisha.
The boss speaks. Who responds?
Well, I think Leisha brings up a really good point, because, and also it sort of dovetails into what are some of those main issues that women are facing, you know, currently. And when Leisha was asking that question and suggesting that we talk about that, you know, I think of very specific students that we have had an impact on, at least during my tenure with the organization. And, you know, and one was a student worker who, when I had started in 2003, she was probably, I think she was a junior at the time. She was a junior in architecture. She really kind of kept to herself. She was fairly shy. And as I just talked with her and worked with her and asked her questions about what she was interested in doing or what she was doing this weekend, you know, I really saw her come out of this shyness shell. She was really, you know, she started to be more open, more engaged, and just getting her. And as I saw this, I thought, okay, here are some opportunities to really get her more involved in the programming work that I'm doing and have her help and have her learn and build up some of those skills. And she was a perfect example.
How old was she?
She was probably 21 at the time, maybe 20, but probably 21. And she was a perfect example of how an organization can, whether you're small or large, can have a significant impact on at least one individual. And this one student just truly blossomed over those 2 years. I mean, she was far more talkative. She wanted to talk about issues. She wanted to be involved in specific programming. She had great ideas for programming. And it was something that you just think, like, wow, like, what if I had never said anything to her? What if I had just decided to sit here and kind of keep to myself because I was too busy, or, you know, or she was busy with something? And you think about those, you know, I think about those situations because I have worked with students for quite some time now, mm-hmm. and how just taking the time to be deliberate with listening to them. And oftentimes it is just being a good listener and being willing to, you know, to hear what they are thinking and not necessarily, you know, shape their views on things, but definitely the impact that can have can truly be tremendous, and is something that students, young people, do remember. Not just women, but also women and men. I think another one of the issues that is a big issue with women on this campus is self-esteem, and it's a very it's something that as you get older you may not think you know twice about, but when you are at that age, when you are new to a big campus, fresh out of your home maybe for the first time, and are just trying to get acquainted and situated in a new community with new people and making new friends and getting adjusted to what you should be studying and trying to have a social life and maybe having a dating life, you know, all of that balance is a lot of push and pull that's happening. And so, you know, self-esteem issues have time and time again been a big thing that I have seen over the years. I think also financial issues are very big, and I think that those are big with any student at this point.
Especially in this economic time.
Yeah, it's not the you hear a lot of students, you know, definitely on this station about and from different NPR pieces of students struggling to pay for college and deciding to not go to college or stay at home or go to a community college because they just can't afford, they or their parents cannot afford to send them. So managing all of those things and just really adjusting to what it is like to be an adult while you are trying to study and make something of yourself and focus on, you know, I mean, G is a good example, too. I mean, we both went to the U of I, you know, both worked. She was an athlete while she was a student. And so what that impact has at such a young age is going to have, you know, a tremendous impact on what your future is going to look like.
Did you want to respond to Leisha's charge?
I definitely. Yeah. Historically, the organization through, gosh, the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and to some degree 70s largely, the organization has really encouraged women to take a stand against social injustice or take a stand against situations that don't feel right, don't look right, don't seem right, to not just be passive and not say anything, to get involved. And so when I think about Leisha's charge, I really think about one of the major roles that we play is that we, as Rachel said, we encourage students to come out of their shell. And there's two things that happens when students do that. One, they start to tap into that creative side and think about ways of how they can make a difference, which is the second thing. How can I be a changing, dynamic force in this world so that I'm not just passively sitting by and letting life to me happen to me, but how can I really influence the world around me? And so I think a lot of people miss that when they deal with college students. They think, oh, they're privileged and they have everything going. All they have to do is just show up and go to class. But I think what really has to happen is that's the age where they learn to stand up against social injustice or racial injustice. And when I think about all of the protests in the 60s at the YWCA, students organized on the quad and just protest throughout the community at large against racism, they were a changing, dynamic force. And while the issues of racism are different today than they were during the 1960s and 70s, we still encourage students to not just sit by and let life, you know, pass them by, but to really get in there and make a difference.
One of my favorite lines from Barack Obama is, it's unfortunate, it's not an exact quote, but something to the effect that someone would spend their entire lives making a killing, and he called that, you know, financial killing, and he referred to that as a poverty of ambition. And I think the focus on social injustice or social justice issues, you're really suggesting to women that there's more to life than getting a degree and making money, I gather?
Definitely. We're really saying that to really be a change of or a positive change on this world, you do have to come out of your shell. You have to look at the world around you. You might even have to look at situations that you might otherwise pretend don't exist. And you have to have the courage to do what's right.
Now, we've got several threads going here. Let's go back to the big issues on the University of Illinois campus with college women. You mentioned healthy dating. Would you say, do you have any sense at all? Have things at all gotten better? Do you have a sense of progress since the 60s when social justice issues came to the fore with the University of YWCA? Has there been improvement, for example, in the assault and harassment statistics? Do you think women should feel safer than they did, let's say, 20, 30 years ago? Do you have any sense for that at all?
I guess it's hard to say. You know, I don't have specific data on what it was like on this campus in the 60s and what it's like now. What we do know is that there is still a need for services that address those serious issues. And that need is fairly high. I think when you're working on those issues, or even if it's your organization doesn't specifically work on that, because the YWCA has been very supportive of other organizations on campus and in the communities, really specifically the Women's Resources Center, who has taken a very strong lead on those issues in more recent years. And the YW was very instrumental, you know, many years ago. I think that you know, I guess I'm cautiously optimistic. I'd like to say that the need to address sexual assault has decreased. But at the same time, I think women are still afraid to come out and sometimes seek help. And, you know, how do you address that need? I mean, that's something that I think is very hard to seek out. And the only thing that you can really do is constantly have some type of education and make sure that you are, you know, vocalizing that you are a resource on campus, and or that you're an ally, that you are someone that is open and understands any number of issues.
Well, I have a 3-year-old granddaughter who's visiting right now, and I worry a lot about all the toxic messages in the media that are surrounding her and her mother, and we are doing all we can to protect her from all of that, but it's just like an ocean out there. Do you address the role of the media in causing low self-esteem?
Oh, we definitely have. I mean, there have been, especially on a national level, the National YWCA has been very quick to respond to images or messages of where women are put in a have been put in a vulnerable position, or where women have no question have been violated in some way, shape, or form. You know, the most recent that comes into mind is with the singer, Rihanna, when she had been, it was a very public, you know, issue. Everyone knew that she had been beaten by her boyfriend. And the YW within, it wasn't even 24 hours, the YW had a national message that went out saying that, you know, this should not occur, you know, and how can women feel empowered to speak out about this, especially if you're in a position where, you know, whether you're a celebrity or you're not, you know, this is an issue that affects all women. And how do we deal with that? How do we address it? How do you address it on a one-to-one personal level? How do you address it when you're just discussing the issue in general? And that's something that the YW has definitely played a role in and has had an impact on.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that so many women today avoid being labeled feminists? They have noticed that so many of the young women that I encounter prefer not to be labeled as a feminist, and yet they benefit from all of the fruits of the feminist movement. Can you speak to that?
That's a great question. Unfortunately, and very sadly, I think that the word feminist, instead of being a positive title that really speaks to women empowering other women in a very positive way for social change, has turned into a women hate men and like only other certain types of women movement or idea. And that's really sad, because I don't think at all that's what the word feminist means, but I think that's how the media has shaped that word so that now it's considered a very negative word. So unfortunately, the feminist movement and being a quote-unquote feminist in the true sense of the word does, in fact, benefit all women. All it simply means...
And men.
And men. But it does... All it simply means is women working together to make the world a better place and a more equal place and a more liberating place, so that we all enjoy equality and being liberated. So I feel like that's really what that means. But you're exactly right. If we're on campus and we're trying to talk to students, one of their first questions are like, I don't want to be a feminist. It's the first thing that kind of comes out of their mouth. And you have to really say, okay, you know, let's talk about those stereotypes, because there's obviously some stereotypes and miscreation of thought that's going on surrounding the word feminist. And what does being a feminist mean? And then what do you think it means? And so it's a great way for dialogue to learn a lot about, you know, women's rights and what that means.
I think that I work with a lot of young women that They almost seem to be broken into two camps. There's the group that they could be called a feminist all day long. They truly embrace the word. They have no issues with it whatsoever. They understand the history. They know the history. And they want to carry on that legacy of what the feminist movement really brought, you know, all of the positive elements of it. And then there's another camp of women that just they don't want to be called a feminist. They affectionately refer to it as the F word. They don't call me the F word. You know, and I think that, you know, I feel like over this past summer when talking to a young woman about this issue, I had an epiphany because, you know, as you get older, I do think in some ways you get a little more removed with each passing year of what these specific issues are of young women and college-aged women specifically. And when in speaking with this woman this past summer, she quoted some statistic that was incredibly high, that a majority of young women on college campuses don't feel that there is work that still needs to be done. It has been done. Why do we need to even talk about feminism?
That was my next question.
You know, we already have equal rights. Why is that an issue? Why do we even need to still have these discussions?
Apparently, Fox News Channel thinks something along those lines.
And I think that is our organizations and any other organization that is in a position advocating for empowerment of women or women's rights and advocating on behalf of women's issues. You know, men and women, part of that struggle, that is going to be our greatest challenge in working with young women is making sure that okay, if we don't have those issues anymore, how can we maintain that we don't have to work, you know, against injustice anymore? I personally feel that we still do have great injustices and our work is still cut out for us.
Well, what are the greatest injustices that women face?
Well, women still
at the university.
I wish I had numbers on this, but I'm sure in some capacity this does happen at the university level. But, you know, women do still continue to be paid less than what men make. If it's a similar position.
University employees?
University employees, probably not as much. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't make that claim.
But about the workforce that they're preparing for.
Well, and I think that depending on the type of work, you know, we still have, you know, a much higher percentage of women that are in secretarial positions and not in director positions or managerial positions. That continues to be a problem. That's definitely a problem on the university. You know, I think with college-age women, they're, you know, any number of the issues that we've spoken about continue to be issues.
Mm-hmm. What about women of color on the University of Illinois campus? I know a little bit about the history of African-American students coming to the University of Illinois, and it's been a rocky road. Some very interesting stories, apparently, for a while. African-Americans in general could not live on campus and had to find homes in what is often referred to as the North End. But weren't women the first African-Americans who actually resided on campus? Have I got that right, or do you know, Gia? You don't know?
I believe that's right. The YWCA was the first organization that offered interracial housing on campus. So mm-hmm. I guess we would be the first group that housed women of color on campus. Yes, the University of Illinois over the past, 125 years was not so welcoming to people of color on this campus. And the YWCA was one of the first organizations that really embraced all women of color. And I say color very broadly, not only African-American students, but Coble Hall, which is now Coble Hall. We used to own Coble Hall. Mm-hmm. That place was affectionately referred to as an international house because we had women of color. We had other women from different countries living there. I mean, it was this wonderful place, a wonderful melting pot of many different women of color. So I feel like as time has gone on, I do think that the position of people of color at the university has definitely improved, especially when I hear stories from what it once was. Mm-hmm. So there's a definite improvement over the 60s and 70s.
Well, let me just kind of put an edge to it. Suppose I said I'm from Missouri, and it seems to me you don't really need to worry about empowering women and eliminating racism because we've solved most of those problems now. So why do you still have this mission? It's all done, isn't it? Why can't we just move on?
That's a great, great point. And I say that...
Just to be clear, I'm just being provocative.
It's okay. I say that because we have Barack Obama, the president of the United States.
Yeah, we're now a post-racial society.
Exactly. Right? There's this great...
Everything's been solved.
Right? Yeah. There's this great feeling that, you know, racism doesn't exist. And it's interesting with students on campus, in their mind, they elected Barack Obama president. They're the reason why he's president. So when they think, I think about racist individuals or thought, it's just old people from a long time ago, right? They elected Barack Obama
president. Civil rights movement is over.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That was forever and ever ago. Those people probably just need to go away and hide in a box is kind of their thinking. So the face of racism has definitely changed, where it used to be very blatant and sort of in your face, and you couldn't go to this drinking fountain or go to this restaurant or eating establishment. That has no longer... that obviously is no longer in existence. And you're even starting to see minorities in position of authority. So they could be a principal of a school or be in higher paying administrative positions than they ever could before. So you're starting to see that. But until there's the day where you can really look at somebody and see them as an equal, which it really comes down to how you see yourself. So until that day happens, you will always have some form or fashion of racism.
Right. We just have a few more minutes left here. And if you would like to call in to talk to our guest about the topic of the 125th anniversary of the University YWCA, you can call in at 333-9455. You can also call 1-800-222-9455. And we're talking this afternoon with Rachel Dekus Miller, who is Associate Director of the University YW, and Gia Lewis Smallwood, who is the Program Coordinator of the University Y. And we're talking about the year 2009 as being the 125th anniversary of this proud and long-standing and great organization called the University YWCA. Well, let's try this out. Suppose Bill Gates showed up and said, I got about $5 million for program work, not your endowment, but program work. If we gave you this $5 million, what would you do with it?
Oh, that's a good question. The very first thing that comes to mind, which is actually a project idea that G and I have discussed more recently, definitely this year, is put some money into working with researchers on this campus. This university prides itself of being a research university, and start generating our own reports on the effects of college women these days. I mean, there is a lot of information that's out there, but there's no other YWCA in the United States, to my knowledge, that is doing that type of work and that is really focusing on the needs of young women. Mm-hmm. And the University of Illinois, given its proximity within the Midwest, given its long history in the United States, could be, you know, a hub for encouraging young women to develop their leadership skills, to empower them to work on issues of racial and social justice, and to be that hub in the country.
Let's come back to the $5 million question, Gia, in just a minute. We have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment?
Quick question. I used to enjoy very much your Black Women Achievement Dinners. Do you still host those?
We do. I took a break over the past year because of the 125th anniversary, and we're having a big gala event this year in November, and the plan is to continue with the Black Women's Achievement Dinner next year in 2010.
Okay, I hope that answers your caller's question. $5 million. Gia, what would you do with it?
Lots of different things. One, two.
Well, we got research.
We got research. Women's definitely needs. The big thing Rachel and I were talking about. We're like, we need to really get with researchers and do research. The second thing is to do more in the way of student leadership development.
You really, do some of that,
we
right?
Do, yeah, we do some of that already, but we would definitely expand those services to not only create student leaders on campus, but then to get them to go out into the campus community as well as on other colleges. We've thought about often starting up different student-based YWCAs in different campuses and having the students of the University YW be, you know, pioneers in that effort. So them encouraging other college students to take a stand, I think, is such an important part in the leadership piece. You can know that you need to take a stand, but until you encourage another person to take a stand, that's an also a really important part in leadership mm-hmm. development.
I have another way I would spend a chunk of that money.
Okay.
I think it would be great to provide funding for opportunities like what I had when I went to the World Office. And even if it could be something that were more long-term, either working with the World YWCA, getting very involved in a high-profile, important organization, and or doing some type of a long-term service overseas or even just in our own country, I think would be remarkable.
International exposure for women to...
Yes, yes. I think that type of experience and being able to see how you can have an impact on the ground level is what's remarkable.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with people being paid equally, regardless of sex or whatever, and if they're equally qualified, but it does not apply in the civil court system. I have a friend whose ex-wife deserted the kids, lived in his house for free for 2 years while they were getting a divorce, and this guy got the recommendation from the guardian ad litem both times, and he has no custody. I'll hang up and wait for you to comment on that.
Gia? Rachel?
I definitely think that the situation that you're talking about is one that does have some validity. Most certainly needs to be addressed. We've been talking the whole hour about women's rights and women's equality, but I think your question and your comment really speaks to the equality of everybody in all situations. And I think until, you know, we get to that day where that happens, the work that we do is still very important because we do fight for not only equality of women, but your question is, or your comment is very valid in terms of equality of everybody in all situations. And I feel like that is something that most certainly needs to be addressed.
Well, let's... wind up just a little bit. Once again, what is the big event on November 6th? Remind our listeners.
The big event on November 6th of this year, it will be, it's a Friday evening. It will be held at the Hilton Garden Inn and Hotel, and it will be a celebration gala event of our 125 years on the University of Illinois campus. The event will go from 6 to 9 p.m., and our keynote speaker will be Gene Driscoll, who is part of our campus community. And for more information, you can contact our office at 344-0721 or look at our website at visit our website at www.ywca.org/University of Illinois.
Thank you very much. This is Rachel Dekas-Miller that you're just listening to, Associate Director of the University YWCA. And we were also talking to Gia Lewis, Program Coordinator. We're talking about the 125th anniversary of the YWCA. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith. Good evening.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Classical musicians don't come with better pedigrees than violinist Anna Kiko Myers. She's been wowing audiences since she was four, performs all over the world, and has commissioned many new works. and Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, Myers talks about why she chose to record popular songs for her new album. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening at 7.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Lincoln Diagnostics Incorporated, Decatur; Michael W. Walker Consulting, Urbana; Natural Gourmet, Champaign; and Prairie Ridge Farms Incorporated, Allerton. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
WILL thanks Jack and Marjorie Richmond for their gift of the Richmond Journalism Teaching Studio, adjacent to Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication.
This is WILL AM.